I'm Jason from Smoking and Drinking in Space, a sci-fi podcast from a couple guys who think they know sci-fi.
And I'm Rob from Smoking and Drinking in Capes, a superhero podcast from a couple guys who wish they had powers.
And we're part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now.
Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others.
And you can find other cool, awesome, geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Welcome to episode 290 of Better Podcasting. On this show, we continue our podcast media host discussion talking about Buzzsprout.
But first, in this week's Better Podnerings, topics include field for Apple Podcast searchability. I have another Mixcast 4 experience, and SP has an update on his RCP2 RMA.
And finally, in this week's Better Pod Back, we discuss some email and Discord feedback from you, our audience.
Lauren, start the show now.
This is Better Podcasting. We are hobby podcasters through and through, just like you. That's why we are different. We minimize the money talk so that you can focus on building a better podcast.
Welcome to an all-new episode of Better Podcasting. This is episode 290, and I am Steven, and I am pleased to say back on the RCP2, and SM7B is SP.
Feels a little bit like coming back home a little bit, but we're going to get into some specifics in a little bit. Anyway, it's great to be back on the show, SM7B, after going through that whole debacle of saying, this is the microphone I'm going to use from now on, and then having to use the Rode Procaster for a week or two. So I'm glad to be back. It's glad to be back in the studio. For those that didn't know, right after we podcasted last time, I left and I came back. So back in the studio and podcasting with Steven. We're going to have some fun tonight. Got a lot of great things to talk about.
Absolutely. But before we get there, let's start off reminding you about some of the recurring segments we like to do here on Better Podcasting. The first, if you have had something go wrong with your podcast, please tell us what went wrong with your podcast and how did you fix that? That's what we like to call the How I Saved My Podcast story. If you've had that happen, email podcast at betterpodcasting.com or come over to our Discord at betterpodcasting.com/Discord because we would love to hear your story and maybe that will inspire others to fix their podcast in a creative way as well. But the other thing that we like to do is what's called our hobby podcaster profile. And guess what, SP?
What?
We actually have one today.
Oh, we do.
I'm excited. This one here comes courtesy of, well, he goes by Waffles.
I'm hungry.
But when he doesn't go by Waffles, he actually goes by Chris. That's right. SP and I have an exclusive rule that we are only allowed to be friends with people named Chris. That's just a rule that we have. And this is a Chris that fits into that equation. So let's get to the hobby podcaster profile. Should we do that?
Let's hear it.
Hi, my name is Chris Osborne. And I have been podcasting since way back in 2017, which is a long time ago, but not long ago as some other people who are here on the Gunna Geek Network. My current show is Play Comics, which is a show that looks at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I arrived to the name of the podcast because, I mean, really, it kind of names itself. I'm taking the comic and I'm playing it, if the game is good and represents that source material well. A lot of the show is based around how much do these games really be able to teach you what is going on with the comic source material. So I like to think that if the game is good and it represents that source material well, then you can essentially play through the comic. Hence, Play Comics. My biggest podcasting regret has been, honestly, just worrying too much about things, which manifested itself in getting started, asking some people to be guests, being afraid to cover some topics, a lot of that stuff, I managed to get over it, but it took way too long to be able to get it done. And I mean, this show honestly could have been probably 2 or 3 years older, or 2 or 3 years further along, however you want to think about it. But it took me that long to get confident enough to be able to do the show and then get to the format that I'm in now. But my biggest podcast success has definitely been the wide variety of guests I've been able to get on, from people I've been friends with that I would have had on the show no matter what, to pretty prominent writers, comic artists, game-involved people. Like, if you look through my list of guests, it is a pretty, pretty exciting list there. Just so many people that if you know video games or you know comics, then you know these people. And even comic writers that are more up and coming, I think even more my biggest success has been them approaching me to come on the show and wanting to help have me help promote their upcoming projects. You know, I can go and ask for people all day long, and most of them will want to come on. But when they make the effort to come seek me out, that is just something that honestly just makes me really happy.
Thank you, Chris, for sending that in. This is something that we are trying to do again with the show. So if you would like to be featured in the Hobby Podcaster profile, please do get in touch with us, because we want to share the stories of fellow hobby podcasters. There's a lot of good stories out there. It just like there at the end. How cool is that? Creators reaching out to him. Fantastic.
It is. And he does a variety of different guests. I listen to his show, and it's fun to listen to. And if you're into gaming, has that fun gaming underscore with the music and everything underneath it. But just want to say thank you very much to Chris. For those that don't know, full disclosure, he's also my co-host on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or one of the three other co-hosts I have over there. So I get to see him every week, and he is a joy to have on the show. And I really appreciate it. I had no idea he was doing this. That was pretty cool, especially the titles that you put in there. Whoever asking the questions, Steven, you did that for him?
No, that was him.
Oh, he did that. Wow. He elevated his video skills just for this show. Way to go, Chris.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I did indeed. So thank you very much, Chris. And if you want to be included in the Better Podcasting podcaster profile, get a hold of us. We want to see it on the show in the future. In the meantime, Stephen, we have some spotlights of our own on the weekly activities and news for the week.
We're going to need to get ourselves, I think, another intro added to the stream deck of bumpers that we've got, because it seems like we're always talking about Apple Podcast news lately.
And that is important for hobby podcasters, because whether you like it or not, Apple Podcasts is still a huge percentage of downloads, at least a third, if not a half, of the downloads that you get statistically across all podcasts. So knowing how a podcast is found and knowing how you can make yourself more searchable so that you're more enticing to new listeners is very important. So in that light, Pod News had a press release from this company called OSHA, and they related some study results. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm going to talk about three things in particular. First of all, is if you identify a keyword that's a key to your topic and your podcast, so you've identified that, and if you put that in your show description 5 times, it can boost your podcast by an average of 9 positions in search results. Now, if you include a best keyword at least 5 times in episode titles, it can lead to an average gain of 7 positions in search results. If you add a keyword at least 6 times in episode descriptions, not to be confused with the show description that I just said, it can increase your standing by an average of 7 positions in search results. So that is this new study. Now, keep in mind, I'm talking about show description, episode titles, and episode descriptions. In that same study that was on Pod News, there was a link to a Pod News article from just a couple years ago, and it said in its key points that Apple Podcasts only searches your podcast name, the episode titles, and author tags. So podcast title, your name, the episode titles, and author tags. Nowhere in there did it say anything about episode descriptions or show descriptions, which the study said it will increase. So, huh. And I have further, you know, I'm a rocket scientist, so some further statistical issues here. Was this all genre podcast, which is just a subset of podcasts? You know, what was the data set that was used? What kind of keywords are we talking about? Were there some that were better than others? Basically, what is the applicability to different hobby podcasts? Really? And we didn't get that here. So of keynote, of course, is that the description keyword ranking is opposite of the study that Pod News did a few years ago, which means that Apple Podcasts is changing its algorithm as it goes forward for search results. Huh. Now, transcripts have only been out there for a few weeks. This study did not consider transcripts. I can only think that there is going to be issues with transcripts also contributing to search results eventually, because it's just too big of a data set for Apple Podcasts to ignore. So we'll get to that when we cross that bridge a year from now or so when data is out there. But just keep in mind that keywords in all of the aspects of your metadata that go into Apple Podcasts is important, not just the old school podcast name, episode titles, and author tags.
Yeah, this is going to really be interesting to see how it evolves with transcripts. Let's be real here. Some of that AI indexing that's been happening, you know that's going to start crawling those transcripts. It'll be interesting to see, but I think the big thing is just, for me, I think the big thing is make sure you're paying attention that everything represents your podcast well, just because you don't know what's going to be considered next. Before, when it was a few things that we were trying to focus on, that was fine. You could really put a lot of time into that. But if Apple's doing this week, what are they going to be doing next week? And what are other services doing? So I think just make sure they're very reflective of your individual show. And just keep in mind, once again, the article you find on the internet from a long time ago might not necessarily be the most accurate information.
And also, this is just another foot stomp, as we talked about with transcripts, that what you say on the internet can be found eventually. So be careful what you say if it's something that you don't want out on the internet.
For sure. All right, the next thing's a personal update. And SP, I'm between a rock and a hard place.
I sense a mixer coming on.
Let's back up here a little bit. For those of you that didn't know this, I've been talking behind the scenes quite a bit with SP about the idea of my next mixer. And this stems from a couple different things. Just the fact that I primarily have been using the Rodecaster Pro Original for a while. And it was been okay, but there have been some shortcomings that we've talked about many, many times that I felt like I needed to try to move on from. So I went back between that and the Mixcast 4, and then eventually went back to the Rodecaster Pro. Well, I about a week ago decided that I was going to change my mind and go back to the Mixcast 4 again, because I got fed up of the noisy headphone preamps on the Rodecaster Pro 1. That's basically what it came down to. I have fallen back in love with the idea of tinkering with audio, trying to make things sound a certain way. And the headphone amps on the Rodecaster Pro 2 make that very hard with how noisy they are. So I decided to go back to the Mixcast 4. I made the decision, gonna do that, go back to that. Now, back up again. For those of you who didn't know this, I've been dabbling a little bit with OBS using the multi-track function, because this just makes a lot of sense to use the interface mode on the Rodecaster Pro or the Mixcast 4 or whatever, you know, mixer I end up with, if it does the multi-track interface thing, because why not record to my SD card and record software as well, multi-track, so that I have basically backups. It's got the function, why not use it? Well, unfortunately, it seems like with the Mixcast 4, as I have tried to do that, I have run into a bit of a gremlin. Like, let's say that you were recording the 290th episode of your hobby podcaster podcast about podcasting, and you were just in the process of listening to your co-host talk all about Apple Podcasts. And in the middle of all of that, you lose audio. You just lose all audio altogether, and you cannot get it back without restarting. That would be a terrible situation, wouldn't it?
Unless you didn't want to hear your co-host.
Oh, that's fair enough. But let's say you're a Canadian podcaster and you want to hear the fine things that your American colleague has to say about Apple Podcasts. You would want to hear that. And so, unfortunately, there has been a bug while I've been trying to do the multi-channel streaming into OBS. And I encountered this actually this past week with the Gunna Geek show. Just before we went to record, I had this bug happen where everything was all set up. I had multi-track coming into OBS from the Mixcast 4 using the ASIO drivers. I had the audio coming into the board and going out of the board in a stereo channel matter going into Video Ninja. Basically just a regular USB connection, audio connection for that. And then all of a sudden it just froze and I just lost all of the audio and I couldn't get it back. And within Windows, it looked like something froze up. The driver wouldn't function right. It just, you tried to do anything, it just hung. And if you didn't read between the lines, it actually just happened again while we were recording this show. So the live audience got to see that, but you who are hearing the post did not, because I took it out. So now I'm back to the drawing board. I think I got to go back to the Rodecaster Pro, which is a totally different way than I was going to take this segment about 20 minutes ago. But I think I'm going back to the Rodecaster Pro and maybe put up with the headphone amps. And I think maybe the alternative thing is I switch back and forth when audio mastering, maybe go to a cleaner interface with my headphones in. I think that might be the compromise while I wait to see if eventually that golden mixer that I want is out there.
Well, you know, Steven, you have your phone with you right there, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah, I have my phone with me right here too.
I know, we could have called each other, but it was more fun. It was more fun for us just to fight through that. And if you want to see this, I will leave the live video on the Gunna Geek YouTube, because we do stream to the Gunna Geek YouTube. If you go to look it up, you'll see it from today on the 20th of March. You can watch all the things happen because the audience was able to hear one of us. I don't know if they could hear us both. I think they could only hear you.
I don't know. We'll go back. One of us will time code it to make sure that you can get to the time code. But if you do go back to the video, if you could make a comment on whatever time code that you want in there, we will definitely put that time code in on the live version, which will still be available. Matter of fact, you will link the live version in the Better Podcasting version so that people can go back and see that.
Go to betterpodcasting.com/290.
Yeah. Well, talking about mixers and Rodecaster Pros, let's talk about my Rodecaster Pro 2. I don't want to continue this segment, guys. I don't, but I have to. So the Rodecaster Pro 2 RMA was allegedly completed. I got the refurbished unit yesterday via UPS. And here's the little card that says it was inspected. And in case you can't see it, the date says 19/12/23, which I assume, this is me assuming, it's December 19th, 2023. So that was like 3 months ago. So it was inspected and it was good to go, right? And I put it in my studio yesterday because I wanted to use it today. I wanted to get my Shure SM7B back because last week I had to use the Zoom PodTrack P4. And since its preamps aren't good enough to, with my quiet voice, drive the Shure SM7B, I took the Shure SM7B off the stand and I replaced it with my Rode Procaster microphone. So I put the Rodecaster Pro 2 in the studio. I had to update the firmware to 1.3.4. I turned it on, and when I turned it on, the power button actually clicked and it worked. And for those that don't know or didn't listen to the previous segments, my previous refurbished Rodecaster Pro 2 unit's power button did not click. Yes, I had a refurbished unit because when I pre-ordered the Rodecaster Pro 2 in May of 2022, and I received it in June of 2022, by December of 2022, it needed to be sent in because the sound pads were malfunctioning. So I sent it back in via RMA. They sent me out a refurbished one. And ever since then, my power button had been getting worse and worse and worse. It was getting to the point where I was worried about it not actually turning on. So the power button was fixed on this. I was able to import my show settings, which I had saved to an SD card, which, by the way, is an incredible capability to get you up and running really quick with a different unit. That's amazing. I tested it last night. It worked. I shut it down for the night, transferred the files over, and was making sure it worked. Shut it down, and that was it. I went to work today, came back from work, and I sat down. I'm like, here we go. I'm just going to get ready for the show and turn it on. And it froze. It froze hard. And for those that have never experienced a Rodecaster Pro 2 freezing, you actually have to take the power USB-C out of the back in order to get it to shut down. It freezes to the point where you can't shut it down with any version of power buttons or anything. So I had to take the power out. So it was a power spike to it. And then I put it back in and it booted up. But here's the thing. I just got this. It was inspected as it was working and it did not work. I contacted Rode support right away. I sent them a picture of what the screen looked like. And I don't expect to hear from them until tomorrow at the earliest, because that's the cadence of my original RMA just a couple of weeks ago. And furthermore, at this point, I'm going to be very direct. I cannot recommend the Rodecaster Pro 2. I love the capabilities, but I spent $800 between the unit and the cover that goes on it and the taxes. And basically, I'm stuck with it until something else comes along, because that's it. That's all I have. It's either that or the Zoom PodTrack B4. I don't have a Mixcast 4 like Steven has. I don't have a Zoom Live Track. This is it for what I have. And so I'm stuck with it. And I enjoy the capabilities, but if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So I can't recommend it. This is the second RMA. This is the third one I've had in my studio that I've been using. So I can't recommend it. And if you have questions about it, please come to me. Rode, if you're listening to this, go ahead and contact me. And I told you last time I was having problems recommending it. And this time I just can't. It's not working. If you do, audience member, if you do buy a Rodecaster Pro 2, please be forewarned. This could happen to you too, where it simply could not work. Even if you get an RMA unit. Now I'm worried about it freezing again, just like the other one, and then not working at all eventually, and doing so outside of the warranty period. I'm really worried about that. So Rode, you need to do, if you do a Rodecaster Pro 3, or you update the, because now you own Mackie, if you update the DLZ creator, you got to do better than this. This is a pain in the butt. I've talked to a lot of Rodecaster Pro OG or Wonder, whatever you want to call it, owners. And there's some problems with that unit too, that you no longer support in terms of updates. So yeah, there's some problems with your stuff, Rode. And it's not like I haven't given you a fair shake. I have. So be forewarned, if you buy this stuff, it looks cool. The capabilities are great when they work, but when it doesn't work, it's a pain.
Well, I hope that at some point there is some form of resolution where software updates just suddenly you have no meaningful-ish bugs going forward, right? And I just hope that, because not a great way for you to get back into the Rodecaster Pro saddle.
No, not at all. The only thing I did different from putting it into my studio versus what they did in the checkout is I updated to the firmware 1.3.4. It's my hope that this is software or firmware related and it can be fixed, because if it's not, if it's hardware related, I'm going to continue having the problems and it's just going to get worse. In this episode, we dip our toes into the Buzzsprout Simplecast podcast media hosting service. Now, according to the company's profiles that I saw online, Buzzsprout was founded in 2008 by a trio of gentlemen, James Mackey, Kevin Finn, and Tom Rossi, and it is headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida. Now, to date, before our research for this episode, neither Stephen or I have had any firsthand experience using Buzzsprout with hosting our podcast. So for this episode, I use one of the two audio podcasts that have podfaded in 2017 that the owner has allowed me with express permission to use specifically for this purpose of testing out podcast media host providers. So what I did on this show is I used the same podcast that I had on Spotify for Podcasters, and I imported that to Buzzsprout and continued to upload a few additional episodes from there. So that's what I did here. Steven, what did you do?
Yeah, so for me, I ended up just creating a brand new show. That was the bulk of how I did the test, was going in and trying to set up a show. But there was another aspect about it, which maybe we'll come back to a little bit later.
All right. So using that experience as a basis, we're going to continue with our format of discussing the highlights, the neutral points, and shortcomings of the Buzzsprout podcast media host service from the lens of a hobby podcaster. Now, before we get into the highlights, as we said, we want to hear from our listeners and we want to hear any feedback about hosting. So an email that we got in December from Dustin said, I left Libsyn about 2 years ago for the same reasons as you. I self-hosted for about 6 months and eventually settled on Buzzsprout. Factors for me were development progress. They were beginning to implement podcasting 2.0 features, listener privacy, support team. Pinecast, at least then, was just one guy with a day job, and price. So that is what one of our listeners had to say. So with that, Stephen, let's get into the highlights.
All right, highlights. Let's start where we always like to start. Can you redirect your RSS feed should you want to ever leave them? And yes, they do. They do have a 301 redirect capability. Now, it is found in the website settings and a submenu called Cancel Redirect. And then it brings you from there to a few different options. There's actually an option to archive your page, which costs you $5 per month. Quote, this plan doesn't include an allowance for new content, but you can always upload new episodes for $5 per hour or upgrade if you begin creating new episodes down the road, end quote. There's also an option to redirect and downgrade. So this gives you an option to back up your podcast and validate the RSS feed. And then your account's automatically reduced down to the free plan, which means that any episodes that are posted on there will be deleted if it is after 90 days. That is a thing that is within the free plan, which, by the way, should put a little note here. We're not paying attention to the free plan for this review because, like so many others, the free plan just does not seem like it is viable. That example right there, why would you sign up and have your podcast deleted within 90 days? We're not going to encourage that. And then the third option, if you do want to redirect, is to just cancel and delete it at all. Nothing can be recovered. But hey, that option is there. Now, we didn't find a way to just cancel or redirect your show if you looked in their iOS app. A little foreshadowing there. But it is there on the desktop interface. So it's not your usual 301 redirect, but there's some good settings in there. So let's give kudos to Buzzsprout on that.
Now, importing the show was pretty easy for me. I just searched for the show and imported two episodes. And then following that, it gave me an option to do a paid account, and it automatically uploaded the remaining episodes from the Spotify for Podcasters account. Now, at this point, I monitored how long it took the podcast directories to update. How did I do this? I changed one of the episode titles, and I also published a new episode on the new feed. And this was kind of surprising to me because it's the first time that I have done this in a long while. And most updated in an hour. Most of the directories that I had been going to updated in an hour. This includes Spotify for Podcasts. It actually updated to the new RSS feed and imported the new podcast. That was actually shocking to me. Now, Apple Podcasts took a couple of hours, and then the Podbean directory, not the Podbean hosting service, but they also have a podcast directory. It took about a day to update, But to be fair, it takes Podbean a while to update and a feed just for new episodes too, if you don't host with Podbean. So that was par for the course for Podbean. So it was lickety split for everything else. I was very happy with it. And if you go back in the day, they say, you know, keep your old feed out there for a couple of months. I don't know if that's necessarily the advice that I would give today. I mean, if you had a big show and you didn't want to lose subscribers, I would definitely do something like that. But if you're worried about, you know, your hobby podcast and affording the actual hosting, you can make the move within a couple of weeks and then reduce your hosting bill, not have to have ride two of them at any one time. Now, admittedly, Spotify for Podcasts, I wasn't paying for, but if I had transferred it from somewhere else, then that would have been an issue. But there was a weird account anomaly Steven encountered. We're going to talk about that later, but importing the show was pretty easy for me. Now, as for the statistics, so far they've been acceptable. There's an overview screen with a 7-day, 30-day, 90-day, and an all times view. There are other views, include apps and devices that are used with the download. It has the last 10 episodes, which is similar to Podbean. I just want to foot stomp, even though we're putting this in the highlight section. I think that it needs to be all podcasts, not just 10 episodes. But good, Buzzsprout has all episodes in another view. So cool. It has locations and achievements there. Now, additionally, from a visual perspective, the stats get top marks, Steven.
Absolutely. You know me. I'm a visual guy. I like visual things, which hold on, let's take a little side tangent here, because I've been wondering, does our audience picture you the same way when you say things like, when you say the foot stomp? You say that a reasonable amount, and I appreciate that. I picture you in like rubber boots stomping. That's how the visual that comes to my mind, and I want to know, does the audience have a similar visual?
Personally, I have the visual of me standing out in the frozen lake ice fishing and stomping on it and then okay. Hearing that ice go boing, 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 boing.
Fair enough. So we're close, but I am a visual guy and I have to admit that these stats get top marks as far as I'm concerned. I love them right away. I think they look so modern. I think that they interact in a very modern way. Quite frankly, I do think that they're probably the only ones we've come to date that do seem not dated in any capacity. They look really good. And when you interact, they're just smooth. And there's a lot of stuff that's right on the page. You're not clicking, waiting for another page to load. They're just working right on the stats. And the categories they have, I think, are laid out in a way that makes a lot of sense. So you have a little a menu that you go to the different subcategories within the stats. You have an overview page, an episode download page, a location page. And then right when you go into those ones are individual pages. But as soon as you go into them, there's at the top some highlights from the information below. So if you're just looking for a quick glance, boom, it's right there on the top. And then you scroll on down and you see those other details that are related to the different section. I just think that they've done a really good job laying out these stats, and I could look at them for hours just poring over them. They also have a feature that I think is interesting called the podcast predictor, which is something that is supposed to help you have an idea of where your podcast might trend. Considering that one of us, SB, has for a long time maintained different spreadsheets, or at least he used to, where he would track the day one and day two statistics to sort of forecast where things are trending. I think this podcast predictor tool could help a lot of podcasters out and not have to input all that data manually into a spreadsheet like SB, because apparently it does use a quote proprietary algorithm, end quote, that will reference historical data from previous episodes and daily download history to try to make that assumption of where you're going to possibly trend. They does vary a little bit, as you might anticipate. So when you first start, the numbers may fluctuate quite a bit, so they say. But I thought that's a cool tool to have in there. So I think top marks on the stats.
While we're talking about the looks, overall, the graphical user interface, or the GUI, is a win. Neither of us had any issues with the web GUI, with the main headings that were broken into subdirectories once they were chosen. And like with the stats, the interface looked pretty modern and was easy to navigate. There were a few design choices that feel a bit dated, but those were in the minority, not the majority. Overall, it does lack a bit of intuitiveness, but overall, we're going to give it a 4 out of 5 for the desktop. Now, the iOS interface was not as intuitive to me, at least, with a few features missing. But according to the Buzzcast episode on the new app, which was just a couple of months ago, the top key features of Buzzsprout were built out on the app. And the company's philosophy includes the fact that podcasting is at its heart still a PC-based activity, but they do realize that everybody's on their phone, so there should be some functionality on the phone versus the desktop only. But with that said, on the desktop side of things, between the stats and the interface, the desktop GUI is one of the biggest wins that Buzzsprout has on our list. Also, in my research, there were no known issues with customer service. And in fact, most customers are very happy with Buzzsprout support that we've noted. They're also a big contributor, since they are headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida, to PodFest, which is an annual podcasting conference that's in Florida. They bring a lot of fans there, so it's a big fan conference for them as well. Now, Stephen, there's a few monetizationable options, to include subscriptions, advertising options, sponsors, affiliates, and a support show link.
Yeah, now we didn't explore any of these, of course, but they are there if you choose. They do make these options very clear. So if it is something you're looking for, you can know what options are there. It did seem like they left no stone unturned with the amount of different monetization options. So hey, if that's something that you're looking for, kudos to them on that. Now, about the financial health for Buzzsprout, we have nothing on our radar to say negatively. And then for the submission to the destinations, this is where you can send your podcast to through Buzzsprout. They do have an entire page listed with 13 different destinations to help you submit to. So they do acknowledge them, but I think it's worth noting that a lot of them are just information.
Yeah, now, I didn't find anything on their website indicating Podcast 2.0 support, and in talking with Stephen, neither did he. However, in a Buzzcast episode, now Buzzcast is the podcast that is the official podcast of Buzzcast. So in an episode earlier this year, they did detail how to obtain Podcasting 2.0 support with Buzzcast. It entails getting your podcast registered with the Podcasting 2.0 directly, basically, and then contacting Buzzcast support, and that's not detailed on their website, at least not that we saw. And I think that could be considered almost a negative, but we'll give it a positive since they at least support Podcasting 2.0.
I'll let you in behind the scenes discussion here, listeners and viewers. We discussed this because it feels like it's neutral. And for a while I was thinking that is something, and I stand by this. I think that if you have to go to a beta program and you have to ask for it, you can't easily find the information. I think that that's a pretty big con and you could almost call it non-existent. However, I had a change of heart, and I will tell you why I had a change of heart. My change of heart was because we have not seen Podcasting 2.0's support to date. And the fact that they support it at all, I am going to acknowledge that as a win at this time, considering so much that we've seen so far do not. Again, I'm not a huge Podcasting 2.0 guy myself. I think that there's lots of questions, but there are people who are looking. And if you are looking for that, at least they do support it in some capacity, even if it is hard to find.
Now, moving on, neither of us have heard any reliability issues with Buzzsprout. And as always, we are open to hearing from experiences from users of Buzzsprout since we've only tested it for a couple of weeks. And as a pleasant surprise, Buzzsprout has unlimited multiple account accesses available. You can select from a menu of a team member to be an owner, an admin, or an editor. Now, to make somebody else the owner, they must first be listed as an admin or editor, but this unlimited multiple account access available is huge when you're talking about a team that does hobby podcasting that just relies on itself. It's not like you have a big corporation. It's usually just 2 to 4 people, maybe up to 6. So it'd be nice for them to all have access so that they can do and contribute to the production of the show. So that's huge. Now, another thing that we've been talking along the lines about is dynamic audio insertion. Buzzsprout does allow for that DAI in pre-rolls, up to 3 mid-rolls with a transition, and post-roll. So this ends up in the highlight section for us.
Now, the last win that we want to give a nod is a bit of a unique one. Now, just to acknowledge a shortcoming up here in the upfront section, they don't do video. They don't do video. So that is definitely a shortcoming here for Buzzsprout. However, what they do is you can upload a video file and they will take the audio from that video file. They say, quote, from the majority of video files, end quote, is the format that apparently they accept. So I think that's such a cool thing for somebody like us who is doing a hobby podcast and you're okay with the other restrictions we'll come to a little bit later as far as processing goes. But you could just upload the video file if you're doing a video podcast and then it will take care of the audio. You don't have to worry about the dual format export. So I think that's a cool thing that they do. Again, with some big caveats there that we'll come back to.
One last highlight that we forgot to put in the show notes is the fact of the Buzzcast itself. It's very positive. It's not tearing down other people in the industry or other companies in the industry. I found it refreshing to listen to. So along the lines of, could I associate with the company personnel? This goes up on that list of, yeah, it seems like so. Now, I don't have any details of long-term anything with Buzzsprout, so I'll put that caveat in there. But if I was going to listen to a podcast about a podcasting service, Buzzcast is definitely at the top of my list there. Moving on into the neutral section, to start this off, Buzzsprout charges in terms of hours uploaded, not data like we're used to. I think I've mentioned this before on the show. The monthly charges in terms of monthly dollars, 3 hours per month is $12. 6 hours per month is $18, and 12 hours per month is $24. Now, there's many different types and styles of podcasting, specifically hobby podcasting. You got audio dramas, you got podcasts like our own, you have review shows of TVs and movies, you have playthrough podcasts. However, podcasting as we've been doing for the last 14, 15 years entails roughly an hour per week. So the 3 hours per month plan does not work for either of us. It might work for you, but it does not work for us. So for us, we would have to go up to the $18 a month plan, and it's the most feasible Buzzsprout plan for us, which is a bit high for the comparable services, especially the ones that we've done, Podbean being one of them, right? So as such, at best, we give it a rating of 3, but it's on the higher side of a monthly fee, so it's actually probably closer to a 2, 2.5 than a 3.
Now, the next thing that we want to talk about in the neutral is the ID3 tags, because Buzzsprout does not support managing ID3 tags, meaning, you know, you don't have fields to fill out, but they will automatically add ID3 tags with their audio optimization process that they call. They say they pull that information from the episode details, so the ID3 tags are actually easy for you to do. You just fill it out on the Buzzsprout site, and then it will take care of that encoding on its own. But it does only go in one direction. So it is something that you have to sort of just trust that it's encoding it as it is. And whatever fields they choose to fill out with their optimization process, that is something that you will have to just be okay with, even if it's missing information that you'd like to see in those tags. So for this, that's why we put it as neutral, because for many hobby podcasters, that's probably enough. But for people who like to have a little more control, it's just set it and forget it and hope for the best.
The provided website that you might want to use for a landing page, especially if you didn't want to pay for a website yourself, it's pretty simple and bland. The website includes destination badges once you set that up. But how do you get a badge if you import your show and already have it listed in those destinations? I don't know, because I tried and it's already listed in places and there's just no simple way to do it. And I just didn't have time to figure out how to do it, if there's a way to do it. There's also no social media integration into the website. As such, there's no real benefit or detriment from the website. To us, the website felt more in line with what Spotify offers you, just a landing page on the platform. There's not much to customize and not much you can do outside of just displaying your shows. And as an additional strike, the website is a number-based URL at the end, and it doesn't have your show in it at all. And that wraps up the rather short neutral section for Buzzsprout.
Now, moving on to the shortcomings, then, for our assessment, there are quite a few. We're going to start with one that was a little bit weird and caused me some confusion. Forward this review, SP actually got the jump on me, and this is something I alluded to earlier in the show. He went and he did the import of the podcast that he was testing this with, and I presume he said, you know what, I think I'm feeling nice today to Steven. And so he decided in that moment that he would be weak and he would actually share me access to that show. So what he did was he went in and in his side of things, he added my email address to have access to that. And I ended up getting an email notification. Like the lazy Canadian I am, I did not action it until it was time to start looking at Buzzsprout. Well, when I went to try to log into Buzzsprout, the thing that I found was there was a message that I received that the account was already there. So it told me that I couldn't get logged in because the account already existed. So I just went through the password reset process, got it all up and going. And when I logged in, then I kind of realized what went wrong, because up to that moment, I was thinking, oh, I must have tried Buzzsprout before, or was it something we talked about a long time ago? Did I have too many Canadian Molsons? Like, what happened here? But as soon as I logged in and I saw that there was access to that show that SP sent me, I realized, oh, okay. It's related to the fact that he added me access to that. Now, I can't say for sure that I didn't click on some link in the email, but I don't think I did. So I think there was something in the process where he was able to invite me to the show, and then it almost tied up my email address. Now, I actually think there's a flaw in the invite process itself. If I don't have an account, I feel like it should probably make you create an account first before SP could invite me, because I think it's just extra data sitting out there, extra potential confusion if somebody doesn't have a Buzzsprout account and you're able to invite them to it. I don't know. It just the whole thing didn't work well for me at the beginning of trying to get added. So I just wanted to acknowledge that here. There just seemed to be a lot of confusion as someone who didn't have a Buzzsprout account, as far as he knew.
In our review, moving forward, we noticed shortcomings with data, both with uploads and downloads. Now, for the uploads, Buzzsprout re-encodes any file up to 96 kilobits per second mono on any plan that does not pay for the additional magic mastering. And that re-encoding is a problem for us. Now, the file type supported is OGG, AAC, M4A, and AIFF. But again, the re-encoding is there. And we last episode talked about how we produce our shows at a specific level and we don't want them to be re-encoded. I even talked about last time how I wanted to go to 192 kilobits per second stereo, which is a change for me going from 96 kilobits per second mono. So this is definitely a downside or a shortfall for us.
Yeah, so this re-encoding of the 96 kilobits per second is something that we want to acknowledge in the same way that we did last week. And I do want to also clarify something right now, because there was a chat that came up in our Discord about the idea of this and dynamic ad insertion, because people were bringing up rightfully that if you have dynamic ad insertion, in theory, there's some form of re-encoding happening. But for us, when we're looking at the re-encoding aspect, that is something we're looking at it independently. So when we acknowledge something like this, we're looking at the fact of, if I don't use any of those features, is there any re-encoding applied to my files? And so for this here, yeah, they do acknowledge right there that it will re-encode all files down to 96 kilobits per second, unless you have that, quote, magic mastering.
Moving on to the downloads, they are capped via the terms of service at 500 gigabytes per month. And that was found on their website. So if that's not the case anymore, it's still on their terms of service, which is on their website. And if you produce a show that's around 50 megabytes per show, and you divide that into the 500 gigabytes, what you end up with is 10,000 downloads per month. That's a far cry for unlimited. And I'll bet you for some shows, that's a deal breaker right there, because if you get 2,000 downloads per episode and or just over that, and you have a month where you have five shows for 5 weeks, you're going to go over that download limit right there. That's just an example. Yes, I know most of us are like 2,000 downloads per episode. That would be awesome. Well, there are some hobby podcasts out there that get 2,000 to 5,000 downloads per episode. So this would be an issue for you. Now, continuing on in the shortcomings is the fact that Buzzsprout is just like Libsyn, Podbean, and Simplecast, which we have reviewed in previous weeks. They only offer one RSS feed per paid account. So there's no multiple RSS feeds for one account. But just like the others we just listed, you can add another show account to your website. Well, it's going to be an additional bill for you each month.
Now, even though Buzzsprout just created and launched an iOS app earlier this year, we want to acknowledge there's no recording or editing available in this app. So if you're hoping to download an app that can make your process just an all-in-one, you're not finding that with the iOS app. As we mentioned before, Buzzsprout has expressed a philosophy that podcasting should be PC-based mostly now, and that the mobile experience isn't capable of mass-producing podcasts yet. So that's probably an indication of why you don't see those features in there. They also cited recent Spotify for Podcasters move away from the all-in-one solution recently. So that also reinforces that idea that you're not seeing that in there yet. I say yet because things change in the podcasting world.
And they admitted that. They said they will keep an eye on this sort of capability. And if it changes over time, they will consider adding those features into the app. They also plan to release a Android app too, by what I heard on their episode, but I haven't seen anything about that yet either. Now, moving on, as far as we can tell, there's no ability to post automatically to social media accounts, but they do integrate into the top of your website. The social media capabilities supported included Facebook, Twitter, yes, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And aside from the earlier mention of the video upload for audio purposes only, Buzzsprout does not do any form of video on the hosting. We said it was going to end up in the shortcomings. There you go. There's your statement right there. And last week, Steven mentioned he's been keeping an eye on the different help pages. So, Steven, what'd you find?
Yeah, while this isn't something that we are discussing regularly, although maybe we should be, I have to say their help is a huge shortcoming. It's really oddly set up. You go to the help page, you're like, oh, this looks like what I would expect. And then you search, and it uses Google to search the actual pages on Buzzsprout. It's bizarre. As soon as I would type in a search term, I would get a Google search result indexed to Buzzsprout. And honestly, the results weren't good. They weren't easy to follow because of the way the Google resource cut off some of the text. So the help, while there was information there, honestly, I think it could use a lot of work.
Bringing the review to a close, Buzzsprout is an interesting service that might work for some hobby podcasters, especially considering its dynamic audio insertion, unlimited team members, podcasting 2.0 support, and monetization features. However, with the download limits, only one RSS feed supported per paid account, high pricing for 6 hours of monthly content published, and audio re-encoding of the file, we're going to be taking Buzzsprout off our short list to move our shows to in 2024. That said, if Buzzsprout does make any changes in the future, we're going to reevaluate the service, as we will with all the podcast media hosts we are reviewing. But unless something major changes with the shortcomings that we listed, and if they are addressed, this is going to be a tough sell for us to recommend this service to other hobby podcasters.
Even though I really, really, really like the look of their stats. They're pretty.
I like their podcast.
This is where we here at Better Podcasting turn the show over to you as we run through some of your feedback. We call this segment Better Podback.
It's Polly Wave time. Polly Wave time.
Yeah, so we got an email from Twilo Zone Media. Hey, Eric, how you doing? And he said, I'm a bit confused about all the conversations that you and Steven have about Polywave files and the various devices. I get the impression that you guys view the Rodecaster as being a device that does not use polywaves. But from what I can see on my own Rodecaster, that is incorrect. It uses polywaves. And you can check and verify this by doing a direct drop of the files from the memory card onto your audio editor. Now, I will admit that the Rodecaster software used to export the track hides that very well. But from what I can see, most of these devices use polywaves, unquote. First of all, thank you so much, Eric, for getting a hold of us on this. I know it is a point of confusion because we've talked about it quite a bit. And it was one of the reasons why I wanted to choose the Rodecaster Pro 2. But Steven, what's up with that?
Yeah, and let's be very clear here. And there probably has been some confusion. The Rodecaster Pro 1 most definitely does use polywaves. In fact, that's something that SP has mentioned before about why he did not go with the Rodecaster Pro 1. When I was going back and forth between that and the Mixcast 4, one of the things that I was expressing was that tool that you mentioned, the software does make it easier to export those files. So basically stitch the polywaves together, but it's still waiting there. That was actually when I first started using the Rodecaster Pro 2, a big point of contention for me because I was used to using Zoom hardware recorders where I would just go grab the files and be off to the races. But I always had to wait for that stitching to happen because of the polywaves. So yes, the Rodecaster Pro 1 most definitely does use polywaves. And if there was anything we said that implied otherwise, that is not the case. Let's clear that up now. It definitely 100% does use polywaves, and it has been a frustration for me for many, many years. However, there is more than one Rodecaster Pro because there is a Rodecaster Pro 2, which I don't know if we've talked much about that on the show, SP.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked about it. Yeah, it does not do polywaves. I can actually go into the SD card and I presume into an attached external drive because you can do that as well through the second USB-C and just copy the file and bring it to my computer. Likewise, I can take the SD card out, pop it into my computer and transport it that way. And there's no polywave at all. It's simply a wave file, either mono or stereo, depending on the channel. The only beef I have with that whole thing is you are recording 14 tracks no matter what. And that is true of any of these devices. They don't allow you to deselect the track. So waste of storage, we've been talking about that before. Potentially, it is dummy proof, so you're not inadvertently not recording a track. Okay, but it would be nice to have an advanced mode for those of us that are advanced and willing to make the mistakes or take the risk or whatever. But it does not have polywave stored on the recordings. So that is one of the benefits of the Rodecaster Pro 2. Again, as I said at the top of the show, it's very difficult for me to recommend this machine because of all the problems I have had. There are three machines that I've had in my studio and all three of them have had an issue at this point.
Thank you for foot stomping that there, SP.
Okay. So we're going to move on to a comment that we had on Captivate on our Discord. For those of you that don't know, Captivate is another podcast media host provider that we have not reviewed yet, but we had Garrett Godfrey come on and he tagged us and he said, when you get to Captivate in your host review, please mention that they offer 25% off for students, educational organization, registered charities, and nonprofits. I host a monthly podcast for a nonprofit and help them evaluate what host they'd move to for their multiple shows a while back. They were very roll your own with AWS, Amazon services for storage, and FeedBurner for RSS. After reviewing all the options, multiple podcasts under one account, free team member, easy to import, pricing based on the number of downloads, we landed on Captivate. The 25% discount after they provided their 501c3 paperwork was icing on the cake. The import went well, and the publishing process now has been so much better for them than it used to be. And that's on quotes. Garrett, thank you so much for saying that. We have not seen that, not that it doesn't exist, but we have not seen that in any of the podcast media host providers that we've reviewed up to date. It's a little less applicable for Spotify for podcasters since it's free, but any of the others that you pay for, we did not see this. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but it's nice that Captivate does provide this discount.
And we would like you to let us know, listeners and viewers, if you have seen this on some media hosts. So we're putting that out there here early because we want you to chime in if you're aware of this happening somewhere else. So please let us know if that is the case. And even if it's one we've already covered, we'd love to come and foot stomp on that.
Boing.
Thanks, everybody, for coming to another episode of Better Podcasting. And hey, for those of you who did watch us live record, or at least start recording at 4:15 p.m. Pacific time, 7:15 p.m. Eastern time over at betterpodcasting.com/live, we appreciate you sticking with us today because, again, if you didn't catch it, things went wrong. Thanks to my Mixcast 4. So now I go back to the drawing board and maybe next time I'll talk a little bit about the DBX 286, which I had originally intended to talk about today.
So thank you very much for listening. As we mentioned before, if you have any comments on any of the podcast media host providers that we have already reviewed, please get a hold of us and we will potentially have you on the show. Hint, hint, that might be happening rather quickly here with one of the podcast media host providers that we have already reviewed. And we look forward to what you have to say about any of those or the criteria that we are using as well. There's 28 criterias. We talked about them in Better Podcasting episode 284. So if you have a comment on those, let us know as well. And we will be working on somehow getting these reviews consolidated on our website in one place, at least the criteria. More about that in the future. It's not an imminent thing. It's not going to happen like right when this episode comes out. We are working on it for some time in the future.
So for episode number 290 of Better Podcasting, I'm Steven saying, oh, Rodecaster Pro 1, you're probably coming back as the primary setup again.
And I'm SP, really hoping that this Rodecaster Pro 2 holds out. We'll talk to everybody later. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of Better Podcasting. You can find the full back catalog of Better Podcasting at betterpodcasting.com. If you're into geeky podcasts, please check out the other podcasts on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com. This show was produced and edited by Stephen John Drew. Voice work was done by L.W. Salinas. Thanks again for listening or watching, and we hope to see you again next week.